Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello everyone, I'm Chris Wynn and welcome to the Roker Rugby podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen, where we build up to our long trip to the South Coast to take on Portsmouth this weekend. So to help us along and to bring us up to speed with all the latest at Pompey, we're very pleased to have the company of Freddie Webb from the local paper The News, as well as PO4cast covering all things Portsmouth. Hello Freddie.
How's it going, Chris? Pleasure to be on.
Yeah, not bad. How are you keeping?
Yeah, I've been keeping okay. I recently got the job at the local paper. Not covering sport, I'm mainly covering like news stuff. But yeah, I started 2 weeks ago. I lived up north, moved all the way down back to Pompey, and it's been a really good experience so far. Couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah, you studied in Sheffield, I saw. Is that right?
That's where I just started the journalism journey, you know.
Yeah, that's where I'm based. So we might have to have a bit of a chinwag afterwards and all things.
A bit of a reminisce.
Yeah. I was going to say, but will you be looking at some point to get into covering the football team? And
well, that'd be nice. We'll see. I've only just started this job, so I'm not thinking right. Too far ahead right now.
So I'm touting you for a job that might not be there or somebody else's.
A bit early, I think.
I mean, first of all, just as we're getting into it, I want to make a confession from the off. Due to commitments kind of later in the week and when we're recording this, we are speaking before the fixtures on Tuesday night. So just in case anything happens, you know, based on what we're talking about, at least people know that we're not completely disregarding what happens on Tuesday night. But Sunderland are at home to Cheltenham, of course. So I'm hoping that I'm basking in the knowledge that we've had a routine home win by the time this goes out. And for Pompey, Freddie, it's a trip to Burton Albion. Looking at the league table, it's got a feeling of a big one to sort that mid-table area out a bit. I mean, would a draw do in that one?
Burn away is always a tough game. It's always a difficult game, especially since Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank came back in, who he really solidified that side. So and they caused Portsmouth a fair bit of difficulties last time by sitting very deep and basically hitting teams on the counter-attack, which has been Portsmouth's newest problem, I think. Because Portsmouth are very possession-based and very pressing-based off the ball. And a lot of the goals that Pompey conceded so far have been counter-attacks and individual errors mainly. So, yeah, it would be a hard game, but I think it's one that Portsmouth simply have to go and try and get 3 points from because, well, Pompey haven't won a game in all comps in over a month. Yeah. They haven't won since the 1-0 win against Shrewsbury a while back. So it's... Yeah. It's been a period of transition at the moment. I think you'll hear me saying that a lot over the next 45 minutes or so.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting into that. But yeah, I thought it would just be interesting to get your take on that, because if people are listening later on in the week, they can check back at the score and see how they did. Because, Burton's Sunderland's only defeat of the season, so it is a tough place to go. And actually, when I was looking at it, I mean, we'll come back into it, but, you know, 8 teams on 12 points and... neither of the two sides have won in the last 5, so it should be a bit of a kind of a tight game in the mid table to try and sort that lot out. But very quickly, we covered a little bit on you already, Freddie. But just very quickly, we said you've started that job at the local paper, but you do the podcast, on Portsmouth Football Club. I mean, have you followed Portsmouth for as long as you can remember?
Yeah, pretty much. It was my dad who first got me into it. My first memory of Portsmouth was. Watching them on TV, watching the South Coast Derby, the 4-1 win at Fratton Park with Lumala Lualua scoring 2 and doing somersaults. So ever since I saw that and saw my dad jumping up and down the living room, I was hooked ever since. And that was about 2005 now. Hmm. So yeah, following the team ever since, and moving down has been an experience because I've lived up north pretty much the majority of my life with my some of my relatives down south. So I see Porto every now and again, but living here permanently has definitely put a different spin on things.
So that you started in the glory days, and the FA Cup win wasn't long after, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. The only FA Cup final I saw was the one we lost against Chelsea, against that double winning side. And Chelsea managed, couldn't get a ticket for the 08 final, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back to this season in a bit, but I want to kind of just look over the last few years, just because it's interesting from a Sunderland point of view, because we're kind of maybe just starting off on that journey. It was 2017 when their former Disney chief executive Michael Eisner took over the club. So you're just over 4 years into that ownership. So how has that relationship been over that time? And are they still pretty popular with how they've done things?
Overall, I would say it's been quite mixed. It was the sort of situation where obviously so many people had such an emotional, strong connection with the Pompey Sports Trust, who owned the club for the 4 years in League Two, went through hell and back. The club were 30 minutes away from going bust. And literally the fans' trust brought them out of that. And that the promise was not selling the club to an owner who would abuse it. But Michael Eisner hasn't. There have been some mistakes, I think. But I think overall his ownership has been a benefit to Portsmouth Football Club, mainly because the Fratton Park redevelopments have needed a lot of money, obviously, since it's an old stadium, mainly for health and safety reasons. There's needed to be some works around the ground. Obviously, still a bit of debate and conjecture whether those works are being done properly, if enough money's being spent, that type of thing. So throughout the time in League One, it's been a grey area. I think in terms of investment in the playing squad, I think most of the time it's been good. It helps that when Pompey sold Matt Clark and Jamal Lowe 2 seasons ago for multiple millions of pounds, most of that money was reinvested. I think wages rise. Ports were still in top third in the league, I believe. Mm-hmm. So it's still up there to a certain extent. But it's, again, more conjecture about if they're spending enough money. And it doesn't help when, for example, this summer, under a new manager, Pompey lost out on a lot of transfer targets, either to, let's say, Ipswich, who we know are spending a boatload of money, the Jaden Stockley stuff, where Jaden Stockley was talking to Portsmouth up and down, but then he moved to Charlton on 5.5 to 6k a week, which Pompey didn't want to go to, which, in my opinion, they shouldn't have. Mm. And also certain Pompey players leaving for more money than Portsmouth were willing to pay them and more years on their contract. So there's that slight perception there, in my opinion. But overall, I think the ownership has been more of a benefit to Portsmouth rather than a negative. You'll hear a lot of differing opinions, I'm sure. But I think the one thing that I'm not happy about their ownership long term has been the academy. Not enough investment has been put into that, in my opinion. Last season, pretty much all of Pompey's youngsters were released because there's no under 23s side. So it's either 18. They have to be good enough for the first team or to be in and around the first team, otherwise they don't get a chance.
Yeah.
They either have to get a loan move away guaranteed pretty much, or they go. So that's one of the areas of conjecture. And some of the infrastructure stuff around Fratton Park already has been slightly frustrating with ticketing and so on. That's you expect the owner of Disney to and the people working around him to get that side of things done properly.
Mm.
But even with all that in mind, even with all the debates surrounding it, I still think overall it's been more of a benefit to the football club rather than a deficit, in my opinion.
Yeah, like I said, it's interesting from a Sunderland point of view because we're very kind of, you know, right at the beginning of
very aware of strange owners. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, we've just fairly recently been taken over, so it's quite interesting. But actually, I wanted to mention the incident from the summer with the academy players. Obviously, they ended up being released after an inquiry into messages in a private chat group after England's defeat in the final of the Euros. I mean, from the outside point of view, because I've only just seen what the findings were and what they did. But I mean, I imagine that the fans and the local media were fully supportive in the measures that the club decided on in terms of their disciplinary process. Was that the case?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that was a different year group that I mentioned to previously. Mm. So I think that they were under 15, under 16 sort of range. It was a while back since I read up on the story. But yeah, for those who don't know, basically a Snapchat group chat got released, got leaked, and containing very vicious jokes, in quotation marks, all of them racist, monkey chants, monkey emojis, the N-word being used around as if you're saying hello. It was disgusting, to be honest. And yeah, pretty much, I don't blame the football club for what they did. They basically said, look, we're going to look into it, and that's going to be it until we've made a decision. And yeah, that's the process you have to go through, and I don't blame the club for releasing those players at all. Even at that age, even at 16, you are old enough not to use that sort of language, because there was no debate whether it was humor or not. It was blatant racism. So there's no room for debate there.
It was good to see a club taking that sort of action, because sometimes, you know, you've got that, you know, where clubs have seen people as assets in the past and not really dealt with it in the way they should. So it was good to see a club taking decisive action like that. But going back to kind of the football side of things, they came in 2017 when you were promoted back to League One under Paul Cook. Since then, Portsmouth have finished 8th, 4th, 5th and 8th, beaten in the playoffs twice. I feel, looking at that, when I was reading it earlier, I feel like it's really similar to what Sunderland stayed League One's been like. Although you've had an extra year, obviously. But, from Portsmouth's point of view, is it just a matter of time that they end up getting out of League One? Or do you think it's a case of the longer you're here, the harder it is to get out?
I think the latter is probably the case. I think the difference with Sunderland as well, especially the difference between the two clubs, obviously going from League Two to League One, the first season under Kenny Jackett was more of a transitional season for me, in my opinion, where we were in and around the playoffs. And if we got into them, great. But I thought for that first season, it was about just establishing yourself as a League One club and going from there. And that was fine. But from then on, considering that the talents that some of those Portsmouth sides had, Matt Clark, Jamal Lowe, Brigginning, John Marquis, who will probably mention more later on in a minute, but at the time that seemed like a strong signing. With all that talent in mind, not to get promoted in those seasons was very frustrating. And most of the vitriol against the manager came from the playoff semi-final defeat against Sunderland. I remember I used to be a poker dealer dealing poker in a Genting casino in Newcastle, watching the first both legs while I was working. And oh God, it was their approach to the game, very direct, too direct in my opinion for the players we had. That was the big thing that got on the backs of fans. It was the tactical system that didn't really link with some of the players that were being brought in. Like, for example, having, let's say, if it's a front three of Marquis, Curtis on the left, and Marcus Harness on the right. They're all they're all more technical-based footballers, but still hitting long balls to them down the channel. Phil Parkinson-esque long balls, if you need a comparison.
we know exactly what you're talking about now.
Yeah, exactly. It just didn't fit. And many people thought that was the season where the support for the manager ended. Mm. For some people. Then it carried on since the third season. That was the season where Portsmouth lost in the playoff semis to Oxford, obviously COVID getting in the way. But but looking at those playoffs, that was the season where Portsmouth needs to get promoted with that side, in my opinion. The playoffs that season compared to the year before, where the Blues lost to Sunderland, it was much weaker. Not just because of the COVID shortened season, but also just on paper with the teams that we were playing. There was a game that season that lost so many Pompey fans' belief in the manager. It was mainly centred around the manager at that time. That would change later on in some later conversations. But it was a game against Coventry where we were 3-1 up against nine men at Fratton Park. Kenny Jackett brings on Christian Burgess, centre-half, for an attacker. I can't remember who it was off the top of my head. Ended up as a 3-all draw, didn't it? So after that, obviously the narrative of it being negative, very safe, that added on top, and especially with some of the attacking players we had, not producing as much as some people thought they would do. for many people, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. But then losing to Oxford again in the playoff semi-final, where Pompey didn't play well in both games, and our captain was benched for that game, Tom Naylor, who's not there anymore. That was a big thing. And then the season, and then Kenny Jackett's fourth season, which I won't ramble on about it. There was a change in tactics in around November, December time, which worked really well. But then from about February, it was a lot. It was a 3-1 loss against Bristol Rovers. The wheels fell off. Completely. The wheels fell off. And if anybody watched the EFL Trophy final, last year's final, when Pompey were playing against Salford at Wembley, that was incredibly embarrassing. I don't think I've ever seen a Portsmouth side play as badly on a major stage as that. And that basically, that game was the last thing that... that was the last Kenny Jackett game anyway. He was sacked shortly afterwards. And it was the idea that the board gave him the full backing when the fans didn't agree with it. And that also adds to the debate whether the board have the best wishes of Portsmouth in mind.
Yeah. Obviously, I was going to mention Kenny Jackett, and you've gone through all of those seasons. From an outsider, it was really interesting listening, because I was always looking in from the outside, obviously. But when you just look at what Kenny Jackett did on paper, you know, he took over a team that had just come up, you know, threatened with the playoffs that first season. Then he was straight in there getting into the playoffs. And you just thought, and then you looked, he's got a 50% win rate, better than the likes of Paul Cook, who took Europe from League Two. And from an outsider, you just think, what was Kenny Jackett doing that was so bad? like you said, he was sacked kind of in the middle of the March. Might be wrong. I thought it was after the 2-0 home defeat against us. I saw he was on a run of 1-7 at the time. You said the kind of wheels came off. But you were still only 7th and 2 points outside the playoffs at the time. So it was still a big risk to get rid of Kenny Jackett, because he had consistently getting you into those kind of playoff positions.
I think a lot of fans of other teams in League One have said that to us a lot. Experts around Football League, experts as well. Looking at some of the advanced statistics for Portsmouth, as well as the table and the form. And yes, it was a sort of thing where Portsmouth, they won ugly a lot, which is a good trait sometimes to have. And also they dispatched teams that were low down the league pretty comfortably. The problem was with the tactical system we had, mainly going very direct, very structured defensively, not pressing as much. I mentioned they changed the tactics in November to a 4-4-2 that was more pressing. Kenny Jackett reverted back to his usual 4-2-3-1 that was more direct and more structured. And from then, a lot of fans always had that little thing at the back of their head where they thought, yeah, but what about the major games? The key games? There was one game, I think, against Peterborough in another season where if they won, they could have gotten to playoffs, or they could have been in automatics, but they didn't. Then playing badly in both playoff semi-finals, and then that EFL Trophy final on top. It was just that sense that the most pivotal moment that the side would fall off, that it would just keel over, and it did eventually, by the means of things. And if you watch Pompey week in and week out, you could tell some of the little details that you simply wouldn't get otherwise by not watching them. It was probably the same reason why many people thought that Phil Parkinson probably was doing a fairly reasonable job at Sunderland. But if you were watching them every week, you could tell that it wasn't as rosy as many people thought it was.
Yeah, I could reel off all the managers that Sunderland have those sort of debates with the rest of the country with, Parkinson, Steve Bruce, and the list is endless when it comes to Sunderland. But as he said, he did lose his job. It sounds like it was probably about the right time when you're part of a company. Danny Cowley was appointed, and it was an interesting one because Sunderland were linked with him at various points in the last 2 or 3 years. But how did that decision go down at the time? Because I know the Sunderland fan base were a bit split when he was linked with us. So was he the fans' choice at Portsmouth?
It started off as a split. Most people were aware of Danny and Nicky Cowley. They always come as a pair. Most of them remembered his Lincoln sides. And again, they were very direct as well. But and I knew him a tiny bit from the Huddersfield side he kept up in the Championship. and they played a bit nicer football. But when I and other fans looked into Danny Cowley's the Cowley's record, mm-hmm. and approach to the game philosophies, there was a coach's voice YouTube clip of him talking about tactical things like wide triangles on the side and how he wants his teams to press and find space themselves. Then the ball got rolling a bit where fans were more positive. But then we had the runner of the Stacey West blog from Lincoln City, who knew Danny Cowley better than anybody. We had him on, and he painted an even brighter picture. Then we had Danny Cowley himself on our podcast, on the PO Forecast. And from there, when we asked him so many questions about how he wanted to play, how he would use certain players, what his general approach to be, what would his approach to the academy be, then most of the fans were behind him, rightly so. And you could tell from his post-match interviews, and his pre-matches, whenever you watch him, he gets Portsmouth Football Club. And you could tell that from the moment he stepped through the door. And it was a hard challenge when he came in, because obviously Portsmouth were in a complete downward spiral when Kenny Jackett left. And basically, he was given the task to... it was only a short-term contract until the end of the season. It was like a show this club your tactical approach and how you're going to go about things. And Pompey almost made it into the playoffs. Again, didn't play very well in the last game against Accrington. Again, another pivotal game where the Blues didn't play very well. But the vast majority of the fans, I think, and I say vast majority, like 98%, 99%, fully back Danny Cowley. And we know under this board as well, they're not trigger happy with managers. They gave Kenny Jackett 4 years when there was a bit of debate, let's say at the end of the second going into the third year. So he will get time, and with the huge rotation in the squad, he will get certain investment as well. So with all those things put on top, but the fans are 100% behind a new manager all day. And yeah, I would say that most of the problems are teething problems in a transitional season, as hard as it is to say that sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned kind of what happened in that remainder of the season, because when he first came in, you went on a fantastic run, and I was looking, with 8 games left, you were fourth, and on that run and almost looking for almost the automatics. I think you were kind of 8 points behind the automatics or something, but on that fantastic run, you fell away and finished 8th. I mean, how much frustration was there at that kind of falling away, finishing 8th in the end outside the playoffs? And it sounds like from what you said, people kind of looked at it as Danny Cowley having a free hit at it, rather than any frustration directed at the manager.
Yeah, at that point, most of the frustration was directed at the players, because that Accrington game was completely different to Danny Cowley's first game against Ipswich, against a Paul Cook side where we knew where they were going to play. They're very possession heavy and they're looking to play nice football. Portsmouth just, I think, as simple as it is to say, Portsmouth bottled that game. They definitely did. Most of the players on the pitch did as well. And it was beyond frustrating at the time because of what you thought might have been. Because obviously, the playoffs is a lottery, isn't it? Sometimes, even if you're not favoured to get out of them at all, if Pompey won that game and the other results went their way, they could have snuck into the playoffs when people thought that wasn't even a question that would happen. Even under Kenny Jackett, we're in those spots in the first place. Yeah. Because the assumption was that Pompey would drop away and finish 8th anyway. And it was very ironic that Pompey finished 8th that season, the same position as they were in their first season under Kenny Jackett. So that, for many people, that was the full story, but closed. And after the initial sadness of that game, people were just looking forward to the summer, something different, because you knew there was going to be a big turnover in players. And obviously, with a new manager, comes a bit of excitement because it's all new. And yeah, many people saw it just as a free hit for Danny and Nicky Cowley, that one.
Yeah. It's funny, again, it sounds really similar to Lee Johnson coming in last season, having a free hit at it with the tools that he had at his disposal and having a go at it. And I don't think there'll be many Sunderland fans disagree with you on the fact that the playoffs is a lottery, and we're pretty sick of them as well. Think of a few more words we could think of the playoffs as well, but I'll not mention those now. So on to this summer, you mentioned it briefly there, but I was looking at the business that Portsmouth got done during the summer, and I'm a bit intrigued looking at the list of players, again, looking at it from a kind of Sunderland point of view. At Sunderland, there's been a big sea change where The focus this year has been on younger players with a lot of potential, which has been completely different from bringing in the Danny Grahams of the world, which we've done in past seasons, which, you know, all those type of players. In my mind, I was kind of thinking, well, you know, that sounds like that's up Danny Cowley Street, you know, with maybe planning long term that way. But I was looking at the list of players and it looks like a lot of experienced players from either the Championship or League One, you know, where I'm looking down the ages of them. You know, Shane Williams, 34, Robertson, 27, Freeman, 29, you know, Tunnicliffe, 28. So it seems like there's all those players of about that age. I mean, has there been a clear philosophy on how they're going to do things?
I would say so. I talked about the turnover earlier, and it was a major turnover of senior players. The captain, Tom Naylor, left. Pompey's best centre-half, in my opinion, at the time, Jack Watmore, also left. Ben Close, very good central midfielder from the academy, more like a deep-line playmaker. He went as well. Craig McGilvery, first-choice goalkeeper, left. If I had to sum it up, the reason why that I think they all left, basically, Portsmouth offered them contracts with lower wages than they were on previously. And I think the main reason why was the board or the manager, maybe, and this is conjecture, they looked at it and thought, why would we give players who in the major games in the playoffs haven't shown up? Why would we give them wages and wage rises and extra, let's say, extra years on their contracts? Even though some of them were good players, Jack Watmore especially, but I think it was just they wanted to change the culture, I think, into, I would say, a winning culture, but also a more drilled culture, I think, which is why so many Championship players came in. Sean Williams, Ryan Tunnicliffe, both played for each other at Millwall, both experienced, but both have several Championship games between them. So they basically know how to play into that division if Portsmouth get into it. Kieran Priedman, even though he hadn't played many games in the last few seasons of Sheffield United because of injury, he was part of the Sheffield United squad that got promoted to League One and then from the Championship into the Premier League. Again, it's that being there and done that mentality. Yeah. And if you add on some of the extra signings who are younger, George Hurst and Ghassan Ahadmi on loan for depth pieces, there was a proper mix of wanting to find experienced players who had been there and done that to add to some of the talented players that were left over, mainly Harness and Curtis for me, but then also add in that Championship experience. I think the biggest signing, I think on paper, is Joe Morrell, Wales international. In the three at the back formation, which Danny Cowley's tried, it suits him down to the ground all day long. Him and Tunnicliffe, a proper combination of a deep line playmaker and a box to box midfielder. So you got the one who goes up and down a lot, but also the other centre midfielder who always looks to pass but isn't afraid to get stuck in himself. And I think one signing who I haven't mentioned who has been excellent over his last two games, Marlon Romeo on loan from Millwall. Excellent player. He'll play at right wing back, covers the right hand side easily defensively and going forward. Not afraid to have a shot, not afraid to challenge a player in a dribble. And again, vastly experienced at Millwall in the Championship. So yeah, the transfer policy was, even though Pompey missed out on a fair few targets, it was to bring in the right blend of experience at a high level while also adding in some younger players on top, in the middle. So it was a real mixed approach rather than having a set philosophy, I think.
Yeah.
And I think they had to do that considering the big turnover anyway.
Well yeah, I mean, that's I was just about to touch on that because you've talked about, you know, all of these players who played big parts, you know, last season or, you know, even going beyond last season for a good while for the club. And most of them left for either rival League One clubs or moved up to the Championship. So, I mean, while the club were doing this, is it something people were expecting, or was there a kind of a big shock in the summer when all these players started to leave kind of one by one?
There was a shock for a few. Craig McGilvery being the big one because he was player of the season last season. I thought he was excellent as a keeper, analytically in terms of XG, prevented a lot of goals. Proper shot stopper. He was let go because Danny Cowley wanted a goalkeeper who could play out from the back a lot better. And we've got one. I think when we brought in Gavin Bazunu, Ireland international from Manchester City. He's been our overall our best player, I would say, because in the short term, the philosophy of pressing from the front but also playing at the back, I don't think would have worked with Craig McGilvery as much as I liked him as a keeper. So that change was a shock, but it was a shock for a reason, that you could see where the manager was going. Some other players weren't as much of a shock. Tom Naylor, for example, even though he was the captain, excellent centre. He was very, very good League One centre defensive midfielder, in my opinion. People looked at his deficiencies a lot, mainly going forward, mainly passing, mainly in forward passing in certain areas. And I think people wanted a change where at first they were shocked, but then got used to the idea when more transfers came in, because it wasn't all at one go. They were drip-fed through the entire window due to various reasons. But as the team took shape slowly, most fans were behind it. We were talking earlier about that new feeling, that new Portsmouth side, and it kind of had to happen given that this is Pompey's fifth season in the third tier of English football, which I think is a joint record. If they don't get promoted this season, it would be a sixth, which has never happened. So I think the side, even though it was a major change, I think they needed it. And most fans backed it, in my opinion, even though there were some shocks for me.
Yeah. And you've mentioned in that a couple of the loan signings, the goalkeeper from Manchester City, you said is flying, Romeo from Millwall. You've got, I saw Miguel Aziz, I think. I don't know whether I said that right, but...
highly regarded.
Yeah, I was going to say it because there's a bit, I was reading the write-up, there's a bit of excitement around him.
He played in one game, but again, Danny Cowley, with younger players, he doesn't like throwing them in when they're not ready.
Yeah.
When he feels like they're not ready, Gassan Ahadmi was the same, where basically he thinks that he will play them when he feels like they're fully matured and focused for the rigour of League One football, because obviously it doesn't matter how talented those players are as footballers, it's an entirely different beast than under-23s football.
Yeah. Yeah, and I noticed Ahadmi from Norwich, another striker, and George Hurst. So have any of those loan players, those loan signings, have any of those impressed so far?
Less so. That's where one of Pompey's biggest weaknesses are, has been up front, in the proper striker role. Marquis missed two major chances in the last game against Charlton, but overall had a good game because of his link-up with Harness and Curtis. Harrison as a target man scored a hat-trick in the EFL Trophy, but for me didn't impress against Cambridge United. And he's more of a traditional target man striker. He doesn't move off the ball as well. Gassan scored, I think, 8 goals in pre-season, so a lot of people were very bullish on him coming in. But so far, the step-up's proven to be a tiny bit much. He's very good in and around the penalty area. I think when he latches onto the last defender, he's really good. But outside the box, well, Cowley mentioned this in a few interviews in the newspaper, that Ahadmi needs to work on his movement away from the penalty area and just his overall game sense. And George Hurst, I don't think has played enough for me to have a full comment on him. Again, more of a target man, but a bit more mobile, likes to get involved in the play a fair bit, can play behind a number 9, but he hasn't played enough for me to properly comment on his performance. I think striker-wise, presumably Marcus will start against Sunderland, presumably.
And they're only young as well, so they'll need a few games to really kind of see,
yes, exactly,
see where
exactly
they're at. But you've said a few times that it feels new, it feels fresh. But what's the general consensus on the business? I mean, do people feel like it's a stronger squad they've got this season?
I think it's a different squad. Many people think there are certain holes missing, especially if we assume that Danny Cowley is playing with the 3-5-2. The main two positions for me that are missing are the right-sided centre-half, and many people aren't bullish on John Marcus at centre-forward anymore, mainly for he's had a fair fit. Even though the XG-wise, it's not as bad as many people think. I think it was like 1.95 in the league and he scored one goal, but he has missed some key chances. And then there's the conjecture of, oh, if he scored those, then Portsmouth wouldn't have dropped points, et cetera, et cetera. But I also think that right-sided centre-half, since Clark Robertson, who was a new signing, he got injured. He was playing at left-sided centre-half next to Sean Braggett. He was very good, very good player. Since he's gone down, we had to play Kieran Freeman, who can play right-sided centre-half, but not really. Playing him in the free, but with Sean Williams playing on the left-hand side centre-half, because Connor Ogilvy from Gillingham was also injured. And then obviously, if you're playing a centre midfielder as one of your main centre-halves and swapping the defensive line so much, there was going to be mistakes and gaps, and that's cost Portsmouth in a fair few games so far since they've changed to it, that formation. So yeah, most fans think there needs to be a bit more support in January, depending, and then looking forward to next summer, where there might be even more change to the squad than there already has been. So as like I said, it's a strange season where, since it's Portsmouth, the expectation, the aim is promotion, like it always is. Like whenever Sunderland are in League One, obviously the aim is promotion every time. But there is that sense of they might need another season to figure things out.
Yeah, so just building off that, I mean, we talked about, you know, the amount of change to the squad. It's a new manager with his first full season. You've talked about, you know, that people still expect Portsmouth to be up there. But where are Portsmouth fans' heads? Or let's go back to maybe before a ball was kicked. To start with, you know, that you've had all this business, you know, first day of the season, where were Portsmouth fans at, you know, before a ball was kicked? Was it just automatically where Portsmouth, it's got to be top six? Or was it, you know, look at everything that's happening, it could be one of those seasons where we just bob about and, you know, keep developing?
Before a ball was kicked, many people's perceptions are different, because Pompey's transfer business wasn't done. By the first game of the season against Fleetwood, Portsmouth only had two legit centre midfielders. So people who were just thinking, okay, let's say something horrible happens and nothing else changes in the transfer window, looking at a squad now, it's not near playoffs because the depth isn't there. After a few more games when more signings came in, I would say most opinions on where Portsmouth would finish range from about fifth to ninth, I would say, where if they get in the playoffs, it'll be at the lower end of the playoffs, but Portsmouth will, unless they drop off for various reasons or if injuries are really bad, they will be in and around the playoff fight rather than being in it all the time. Because looking at some of the other teams who are up there are a bit more settled. Some of the other teams are spending more money than Portsmouth are. It's catching too. Wigan's turnover is very high and they're top of the table, but so was Ipswich's, and they're nowhere near it at all. So it's very strange. But yeah, overall, most people think probably between fifth and ninth, where playoffs and promotion could be a possibility if things go right. But I think the majority, yeah, or it could go wrong and we'll finish around seventh, eighth, ninth again, and it will need another summer.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the business wasn't done before ball was kicked, but you went on to win the first three games of the season, Fleetwood away, then Crewe and Shrewsbury at home. But Portsmouth haven't won in the last six after those first three games. So what happened? Did something change? Because I noticed those scores were quite close as well. So, I mean, did anything change, or is it just not getting the rub of the green or something like that?
To start with, I could tell that Pompey were very good defensively, even though the squad wasn't done yet. The lack of depth at centre midfield was a concern, but also just the fact the front three weren't really playing as well, even though we were getting the results. As you can see, the Crewe game was excellent. That was one of Pompey's most complete performances where they won the game, I think. Fleetwood, a very scrappy away game where they could have lost. Shrewsbury was a bit tighter, but Pompey still deserved it, I think, for a mixture of reasons. Danny Calder was playing an older formation. He was playing a 4-2-3-1 and then various times a 4-3-3, because as the newer players came in, he wanted to try them. So there was a lot of change around in formation, a lot of change in personnel, which most of the fans didn't mind, because any manager has to figure out their best team, don't they?
Yeah.
I think the Wigan game was a big one, where Portsmouth played a 4-3-3. Obviously, being away from home, they wanted to solidify possession. So they played Joe Morrell, Sean Williams and Ryan Tunnicliffe in a three, where Ryan Tunnicliffe, who's more of a box-to-box, he was given a slightly more advanced role going forward, which he's not used to. And overall, it defensively, they were completely solid throughout the game and they got punished for their one mistake. But going forward, they didn't create a lot. And that's been the biggest Achilles heel so far. Not in the way that they're approaching the game, because most people agree with how with the Cowleys' approach to football, where they're playing out from the back and trying to look for gaps by switching the play or through killer through balls. But it just hasn't been. It was either the final ball's off, or when the attacker runs onto the ball, he either dwells on it too long or shoots it into a crowd of defenders. That's been the biggest issue, I think. So when the attacking interest dropped and all the changes happened as well, that's where the results have dried up. But I've been talking to some fans. Some fans think it isn't great at all because Pompey haven't won in over a month. But some fans think, look, we're seeing the little signs of where this team could be if they cut out individual error, if the side cut out individual errors and that type of thing, they could be up there soon. And most people think, with all the changes, three wins, three draws and three defeats isn't that bad. It's in line with a lot of the other teams as well. But there have been so many games where Pompey could have won more games than they have, that got punished for their mistakes, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, like we were saying earlier, the division is a bit ridiculous at the moment with all those teams bunched up on 12 points in mid-table. I think I'm sure there's like 8 teams on 8 points or something like that. But I mean, like you said, 6 games without a result, though, and we've talked about all of this change. You've talked about how fans are, you know, maybe giving them a bit of, giving them a bit of a grace period and things like that. But, I mean, at some point with a team like Portsmouth, where, you know, even if people understand he's building for the future, there's still pressure to deliver results quickly. So is there a chance that a couple more results or the run extends a bit longer and, you know, people actually start to turn?
A few will. Like all fan bases, so Pompey fans sometimes love a moan, me included. So that can always change, where some fans think it's completely ridiculous and then he's changing things immediately. As long as there's a sign of potential improvement, I don't think it would be there. But a lot of the pressure has more been on the players than the manager, especially some of the players who have been who were in some of the new transfers as well, but also the players who have been here longer. But of course, there's pressure, but it's Pompey in League One, and the aim's always promotion, like I said, and it will get more intense as those bad results come on, like the Fratton Park game against Cambridge, where we did play very well at all, deserved to lose the game. Fans were chanting, "This is embarrassing," on the 75th minute. Then the players woke up again and played a bit better, but it was too late in the game anyway. We put Pompey 2 down. There will be, that's a perfect example. There will be that edge if it doesn't go very well. But and patience will run thin if the poor form continues for an extended period of time. And when I mean extended, I mean another month and a bit, I think. But most people want Danny Cowley and Nicky Cowley and their vision to work so much that there will be more support of them short term, I think.
Yeah. Well, I was just about to say, actually, I mean, we could be talking like this and then the midweek game against Burton, it could be all change and, you know, everything's on the up, but that's how football works, I suppose. But Saturday's game, last season was odd, really, in that, you know, Portsmouth took Sunderland apart at the Stadium of Light, absolutely dismantled us, the Stadium of Light in October, but we were fully deserving at your place, getting all 3 points in March. Fratton Park's always been a tough place to go for us. I was looking earlier on at the record. We've won 12 out of 56 games at Fratton Park. And actually, before last season, we hadn't won on the South Coast since 1997. So there you go. That was a decent run of games without a win there. But like we said, in the last 2 fixtures, you've been beaten by Cambridge and drew against Plymouth, and you've mentioned those. You've said that the potential's there. 1 or 2 disgruntled voices there, the minority at the moment. But are you feeling a little vulnerable at home at the minute?
I think that most people aren't really thinking much about home and away, I don't think. I think they're mainly taking it game by game because the performances changed wildly from one game to the next, regardless of what pitch they're playing on. Cambridge and Plymouth was the biggest example. Against Cambridge, they deserved nothing out of that game. But against Plymouth, overall, they performed so well going forward with the 3 at the back formation. And then going from there, I thought if they got the win, it was well deserved. But they were it was 2 major defensive errors that led Plymouth in, where Ryan Hardy, I think, got a brace, but he deserved that brace for being in the right position. But Portsmouth fought back the entire time. The players didn't give up. There were tackles flying in. And and they got the last-minute equaliser, yes, from a defender, so it wasn't the striker scoring again. But like I said, there were signs of improvement there, and there was still fight in this squad, which Pompey fans always like. They'll always back a team that tries 100% every single game, whereas many people thought in the Cambridge game that they didn't until the 75th minute.
I was reminiscing about our win back in 1997 for a second there. Just
Nick, the year I was born.
Really? Don't. Because I was at that game in 97, and I think it was Nicky Summerby's debut, I think, and he scored the fourth, I think. But that was the year you were born. Right, brilliant. That's really made us feel better. Thanks for that, Freddie. I think I've got older emails than you, Freddie, but there you go. Again, going back to recent encounters, they've always been pretty rough games, really physical games between the two sides, you know, sending off here and there, or, you know, the odd tussle involving, you know, players and fans on you know, on the odd occasion. Mm-hmm. But with Danny Cowley in charge, should Sunderland fans be going to the game? Or do we expect to see a different Portsmouth side, different approach?
There'll still be a physical edge to the game because all the players brought in, they all still get stuck in enough. I wouldn't go as far as to say they're physical as some of the other sides in League One, but they're still physical. They're still a physical side enough where they're not pushovers on the ball. But what you'd expect from Portsmouth this time is playing out for the back for number one. Bazunu, very mobile, often goes out of his penalty area a lot. They like to play, like I said, the wide triangles. If the movement off the ball is good from Pompey, then they'll look to keep it on the floor to start with, then move to the wide areas. They're not afraid of crossing, but hopefully it's actually crossing with a purpose rather than a bit aimless like it was. And they'll look to try and create gaps in the Sunderland backline through switching the play and genuinely playing the ball as quickly as possible. That's what Portsmouth will try to do. And they're very aggressive in the press off the ball. That's the big thing, I think. Analytically, Portsmouth are one of the most aggressive pressing teams off the ball in the league so far. I think they're third highest. So that's definitely a major thing. And if you think back to the Pompey game at the Stadium of Light, where they played very well, that's what Pompey did. Mm-hmm. They got on top of Sunderland very quickly and caused mistakes. And if Pompey did the same thing at Fratton Park, they might be able to get a result out of the game. It just depends if their defence will be strong enough and the individual errors aren't there.
Yeah, I remember the first goal in that game. You won the press really high up, and you scored that first goal early on. But I think you've mentioned it a couple of times actually. But you joined top scorers Harness, Brown, Curtis on two. Sunderland have got three players who've scored more than two. So is that where the major problem is this season? Has that been kind of just get scoring goals?
Yeah, at the moment it's scoring goals. Defensively, the side were very good for a while, but then the individual errors crept in, which it always does. So that's where Portsmouth have conceded their goals from. It's a lot of work in progress. It's a lot of the final ball being in just the wrong way or one bad touch here and there. I think most people agree with the overall philosophy. It's just the execution of it. And that's the big thing. And that's been the big reason why Pompey haven't won many games they should have done.
Yeah, again, we've talked about fans' expectations. Fratton Park being, I mean, like in my experience, Fratton Park's always been a tough place to go. Portsmouth have always seemed to be good at Fratton Park. But are Portsmouth fans going to be turning up on Saturday expecting the side to get a win or at least a point? Or would you say there's a bit, you know, the confidence is pretty low at the moment considering the run you're in?
They'll expect them to be competitive. I think my prediction will be a draw. I think it'll be a very, very tight game still. But bearing in mind, it might just be a luck thing where something might have to break for Portsmouth at some point. You can't. The Blues shouldn't go another month without winning a game. It's not that bad. Mm. It's just that I do think something needs to break for them in terms of results.
Yeah. And you've got Curtis and Marcus are still there. You've mentioned those guys and, you know, some of the loan players you've mentioned. But who's going to be the main danger that Lee Johnson and his side are going to be kind of looking out for on Saturday?
Ooh, tough one. I'm going to mention two players, both wide players. I mentioned Romeo earlier. He's been excellent on that right-hand side and has linked up with Marcus Harness, who's playing slightly behind the two strikers, Curtis and Marcus. Romeo's been linking with Moses side very well. So that right hand side is genuinely better in terms of quality. But on the left hand side, you have Roland Curtis, who played out of his skin against Charlton, put in a great through ball for John Marcus's flick on to Harness, who was in the middle of the penalty area for Pompey's second goal against Charlton. When Curtis gets the bit between his teeth, he plays exceptionally well. Bit of a streaky player, but when he's fully on, he's on. So I think he'll definitely be a danger man on there. And he's got Lee Brown at left wing back, who that partnership has always been good with overlapping runs and knowing where they are and so on. So I think those two are the key attacking changes for Sunderland to look out for. Pompey will hopefully have a steady midfield, and hopefully Connor Ogilvie will be fit again and will play left-sided centre-half, so defensively they'll be a bit better as well.
It's interesting that, because you're saying you're strong down your right, and we've been really strong down our left with Serkin, who were brought in from Spurs, but he went off with concussion at the weekend, so he's going to be out of the midweek game, and there's probably a little question mark over them with the weekend, so it'll be interesting to see if Serkin makes it back for that. But you've said you fancy a draw for the game on Saturday, so I don't need to ask you a prediction for the game. But what I'd like to do is ask your prediction on whether or not we're going to see Portsmouth in a top six finish come May.
I'm going to get pelters for saying this. because, like I said, it could go either way. If things go right, Pompey could end up in the playoffs. And also, I said on the podcast, a range position. I literally ducked out of that question where I said, oh, they could finish between 6th and 8th, and it covers both.
I'm just looking for a yes or no.
I still think the squad needs a little bit more to get into the playoffs. I think I'm not fully convinced I'll make it. So I'll go for a no for now, and hopefully I'm wrong. And I thoroughly hope I'm wrong by the time the end of the season rolls around.
Wow. Heard it here first. Portsmouth expert says...
I'm going to get absolutely pilloried for that, honestly.
Says they're not making the playoffs. Brilliant. But I assume you're going to the game? You're going to be there on Saturday?
Yeah. If I can get a ticket for the game, yeah. I haven't got a season ticket since I just moved down, but I'm sure there'll be one left.
Yeah. It's going to be one of those, isn't it, where, you know, it's one of those games where we missed last season. You know, it's one of the big games in League One where we couldn't get along to, and... I think the fans are going to be up for it on Saturday.
Oh, absolutely. Both sides will be. Both fan bases always set a wicked atmosphere wherever they go. So there won't be any shortage of that on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I said, it always seems to be a good clash when we meet up. So let's hope it's another entertaining one in front of the fans, which is always good to see again, at least when the fans being there. Especially at Fratton Park, because I always considered Fratton Park to be a proper football ground, apart from the journey and usually the result. It's a good place to watch football. But on that note, I just wanted to say thank you very much, Freddie. Really enjoyed the chance to catch up, and all the best for the season, Ed.
Thank you very much. Same to you.
Good stuff. Cheers, Freddie. And thanks again for listening, everyone. Keep a look out at Roker Report for all the build-up ahead of the game against Portsmouth at the weekend on Saturday. And keep an eye out in all the usual places for the next pod that should be dropping very soon. But from us, it's bye for now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.